Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh,
you're in the madhouse now.
Warning, this episode contains foul language, discussions of death and dying, and is generally a real tearjerker.
Weirdos, you are listening to Keep It Weird, the podcast for all things strange and unusual, spiritual and skeptical, profound and pretty, and everything in between. Each week we get to sit around and chat about something weird, and this week is a freaking banger, y'all. Woo! We've been prepping for weeks to bring you a series that offers an in-depth discussion on what the hell happens when we die. Oof, scary thought, I know.
My goodness.
We want to know where that tunnel leads. Should we follow that light? And who is this dark-skinned, tall glass of water trying to pass himself off as Jesus, who we all know was white?
So white. Light brown hair.
We are going to share some real-life stories from people who experienced death firsthand. We're going to see what the scientists have to say about the matter. And we're going to try and leave you with a fascinating and hopefully reassuring picture of where we're headed after we shuffle off this mortal coil. My name is Ashley, and this is my co-host, Lauren.
Hello, weirdos.
And it's time to die.
Time to die, everyone.
No, just kidding. We hope none of you are going anywhere for a very long time.
Goodness, yes. I hope you're with us forever and ever. But it sounds so morbid and strange, but we're really excited for this episode because it's just such a fascinating topic, even though it revolves around death and like some really scary near-death accidents. But man, is it interesting.
You know what's really special about being a woman, too? Just speaking of death, this just popped in my head. Last Wednesday or Thursday, I don't remember which day it was, I was sitting at my desk at work. My boss was there, which was like, ugh, because when he's not there, it's like, who cares? But my boss was there. For whatever reason, well, I know what reason. I was researching this particular episode, and I started thinking about, like, what would happen if Joe died. Oof. And then I was like thinking about it. I know. And it was like, oh, man, that's so sad. That's so sad. I would hate that. And then I thought about watching Netflix alone. And I started crying at my desk.
Ashley, I love that it took the Netflix to really like set you off. Oh, honey, you love your fiance.
Like, I can't watch stuff by myself ever again, and I don't want to watch it with anyone else but him. And if he's gone,
he's your person,
I'm going to be so sad.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
I started crying at work, and
you
was
sweet
like, well.
Thing. I love that Netflix was the tipping point. That really
yeah,
is so
that
special.
Really pushed
but
me
I do
over
get
the
that
edge.
When you have shows with your partner, and that is like your favorite pastime. Which, like, yes, same over here. Like, we love just staying in and watching all the shows. That is really sad to think of not having your couch buddy anymore and having to watch alone. I don't like it.
Me neither.
Anytime I think of Alex leaving, or even me, now that I have a child, I used to not – this sounds so awful, but I used to not think about my own death that much because I was just sort of like, oh, well, people will figure it out and carry on. It's okay. Like, I'm selfishly so sad if Alex leaves me. But now that I have Wilder, if I think hard enough or go down the rabbit hole of thinking of me dying and him, like having to walk up to Alex and be like, where's mama? I just lose – I lose it. I can't control the tears. I'm already getting a lump in my throat just talking about it now. It's just crazy. Like, oh, I can't leave him ever. So I need to take some more vitamins. I need to get healthier. I gotta stay around. I need to stop the caffeine intake, all of it.
It was funny, too, because I told Joe this. He was like, babe, that's so sweet, blah, 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 blah. And then he went to the doctor yesterday, and it was like a new doctor visit, so they had to do everything. They had to, like, you know, cup his balls, take his blood pressure, like all
the
stuff.
Whole shebang.
And the first attempt at taking his blood pressure, it came out really high for some reason. And just to let you know, like, they took it again a little bit later, and it was perfectly normal. Like, they don't know why it was spiked like that, but...
Yeah.
He immediately was like, well, that's it. Like, I can't.
I'm done.
No more pizza, no more beer, no more blah, 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 blah. And so when they took his blood pressure again, they were like, no, it was us. Like, you're fine. Your blood pressure is great. He was like, thank God, because I have a calzone in the fridge and I'm going to eat it.
And I've like, been looking forward to it.
How quickly we abandon everything.
He's like, that's it. Like, healthier decisions from here on out. Oh, good. The calzone. Oh, I can still have it. Fine. Oh, and I also wanted to crack open that beer. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. So glad.
Also,
I don't have
is he Adam Scott from Parks and Rec?
Yes, he loves calzones. And the best thing is that Champaign, for anyone, I'm sure everyone knows, we moved to Champaign, Illinois. Mm-hmm. We moved here. There's so much stuff here that makes us go like, oh my God, we're so meant to be here. Like little things like apricot LaCroix, which they sold in the North Hollywood Target for like 2 months and then never sold again. We literally thought it was discontinued. It's sold everywhere here. We can get it anywhere we want. We can get Monocle's
pizza
to be
in Illinois.
Delivered to our door.
Monocle's. That's like, the true win.
When we
honestly.
Order pizza, we don't have to get Domino's. We can get Monocle's. And the biggest one, well, maybe not the biggest one, but a pretty big one. One day we were like looking on our app. We wanted to see if we can get food delivered. We're still discovering places. And I found a calzone restaurant. They sell only calzones.
Oh my gosh.
And they have like 50 different calzones.
Stop it.
And it's delicious.
This is literally an episode of Parks and Rec, but truly. Also that just makes me so happy for you guys, for Joe, especially if he's a big calzone man. That is magical.
The only
to have
thing,
every type too.
Yeah. The only thing I'm upset about is that it's not called the low-cal calzone zone. And I don't see why you would have a calzone restaurant and not call it the low-cal calzone zone. I guess copyright.
Oh, gosh, that's good.
Well, anyway, today we're talking about NDEs or near-death experiences. And yes. We were inspired by a story that was featured in our most recent Listener Ghost Stories episode. Reddit user ApprehensiveSoup73 told us about the time she almost died during childbirth and how she was able to witness a phenomenon she can't possibly explain.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I found interesting that was a real duh moment for me, but also I never really thought of it before, is that NDEs are a subcategory of what is known as an OBE or an out-of-body experience.
Yeah, I guess I never thought of it that way either.
I didn't either. And then once I was like, I read that, I was like, well, yeah, duh.
Yep, that makes total sense.
Out-of-body experiences can happen to anyone at any time. Sometimes they happen during meditation. Sometimes they happen during drug trips. Sometimes they happen during dreams while we sleep. And sometimes they even happen if we get frightened. It happened to me. I texted you right after because I had to tell you.
Yes, you did.
One time Joe scared me so bad, I literally saw myself from behind.
That just gave me chills again. I don't like it.
Purposefully scare me. It was basically like it was in the dark kitchen. I had the refrigerator door open. I was getting something out of the fridge, and he did that thing in horror movies where he was behind the door of the fridge when I closed it. And I swear to God, I left my body.
And just saw the back of your head being
terrified.
Saw
the back of my head.
Your fiance.
I like. Well,
it's not okay.
It wasn't even the back. It was like back and above a little bit. Like I was at an angle. Either way, hated it.
You did a little float up.
But also it was pretty cool.
What's interesting is like I think I read something. I was trying to find it, but like sorry if I'm misquoting this, but I'm almost positive during my research I found that like 40% of all people have experienced some sort of dreamlike hallucination where they float above their body or they're looking, you know, at their body in some way, which I thought was just crazy that it happens associated with sleep so much more than I thought. Like that's,
yeah.
I've never had an experience like that. So it just sounds so wild to be like, hey, I'm looking at myself am I in a dream? Like, I just can't even imagine that. 40% is a much higher number than I thought.
Well, a lot of people believe that actually when we sleep, we are able to have out-of-body experiences more easily because we are unconscious and something else in us takes over.
Right.
So that's why, you know, there's lucid dreaming, astral projection even, which you do when you sleep. But also... I had a theory recently, and it was one of those things where I was getting ready for bed, and I was like, hey, Joe, I have a theory on ghosts. Do you want to hear it now or tomorrow? And he was like, ugh, now. And I was like, what if there are no ghosts? What if when we go to sleep, our, like, spirit or something, like, whatever it is inside of us that makes us us, leaves our body and sort of, like, roams around and acts out what we're doing in our dreams?
Oh, and that's like it could be our consciousness hanging out in the world.
And that's why a lot of times people see ghosts at night because people are sleeping. Right. And also why places like hotels are haunted a lot because people sleep like en masse.
It's a place of sleeping. There's beds everywhere. Oh, my goodness. I kind of like that.
I don't know. It's just, like
we're,
it's just
our
like
bodies
a theory,
are just, we're just laying there drooling, sprawled out on the bed. Like our bodies, our physical body is useless. So I like the idea of thinking that our consciousness is like, I'm going to go take a little trip.
Yeah.
I'm going to go roam around.
But, you know, we're asleep and we don't know what's happening. So our body is just sort of like wandering around. But then that would also explain ghosts that like interact with you and stuff, because there are people who can lucid dream. There are people who can astral project.
Right.
And that would just be them.
Right. It's the people who have the skills. It's
anyways.
So it's so weird to think about, but I don't hate it.
Okay, so NDEs are specific OBEs that take place when you are about to die, dying, or have died. And one of the more interesting things about NDEs is how similar they are to the people who have had them. Despite having no connection with each other, nothing in common, and no fervent interest in the paranormal, religion, or life after death, and yet their experience is similar to so many others. And... common experiences with NDEs are having your life flash before your eyes, seeing bright lights or one bright light that you feel attracted to, going through a tunnel, feeling immense peace, seeing loved ones who have already passed, and occasionally meeting higher beings some would and do describe as God or Jesus. And these are the kind of the points that we're going to touch on throughout this series. Most NDEs come from the accounts of actual dying people. Obviously, some are revived and can tell the tale of what they experienced, and those are the most valuable accounts. But you can look at this in two ways. One, we're really experiencing these things. Or two, something happens when we die that causes something to happen in our bodies and our brains that makes us hallucinate and think we are experiencing these things. So in this series, we are going to present the science portion, like, you know, the releasing of chemicals, etc. But we do hope to leave you with more evidence to the contrary. We've gathered stories from people all over the world that may offer more proof that death is not the end of life. It's just another thing we all have to go through.
I think it's just a new chapter.
Yeah. A lot of people that I've read about, I've read a lot of doctors, neurosurgeons that do believe in life after death, and a lot of them have said that dying is just like going through a door.
Mm-hmm.
And something completely different on the other side. So we're going to start out with a banger right off the bat. Seeing the light. I saw the light.
I'm changed.
There's a lot of different ways light plays a role in NDEs and honestly a lot of other spiritual experiences. And I can't help but think, Lauren, about our first episode of this season when we discussed the 144,000 from the Bible.
I know. I was thinking of that. We kept saying we were seeing the light.
Yeah. Well, I listed all those things. Light itself, the speed is 144,000 nautical miles per second. The Great Pyramid was encased in exactly 144,000 white stones. Jesus constantly referenced light. And even if you think of auras and chakras and the fact that the only reason we can see is light, light is as important for life as it is for spirituality. So, Lauren, What does science have to say about us seeing the light upon death?
Seeing the light. I know. It really does fit into what we've been talking about this season. And I first want to say I am helping out with the science portion of this episode, but you guys know I'm always the one to say it is fun to believe. I very much enjoy the spiritual side of these things, but we should present all of the facts if there are any. So, of course, scientists, when it comes to NDEs, are doing their best to study them, but I just thought I should preface, like, with this series, like, basically everything is theories right now because it is so hard to study near-death experiences when you would basically have to be, like, next to somebody, you know, like, right before they die. You'd have to be with a dying person at all times. You have no idea when they're going to go, even if they're on their deathbed, or be next to someone as they're getting, like, hit by a truck or something. So it's really hard to research unless you're able to interview a large group of people who experienced, you know, a near-death moment, and they can tell you kind of what they saw and what they went through, which we've done. And they're trying to get their theories from that, but research is very difficult with NDEs. So I just wanted to say that. And right now it's just a lot of theories. They're doing the best they can. But as Ashley said, a lot of scientists, a lot of doctors, like neurosurgeons who are staring at people's brains all the time, have been convinced that we are experiencing something, you know, unexplained, and that we could be passing on to the next life, which I think is really, really cool that they're not just, it's not just science only. They are seeing that this is an unexplained phenomenon. So anyway, I just wanted to say that. Now into why do we see a light or a glow when we are close to dying? So scientists do have some theories surrounding this one, but as with everything else, not enough evidence from humans. So most of the time we are studying our animal friends. But also, it has been found through research that a number of medicinal and recreational drugs can mirror the euphoria and flow often felt in near-death experiences, which Ashley mentioned, but specifically the drug ketamine, which it feels like made some weird appearance on my TikTok page for a long time. Everybody was talking about ketamine, and I was like, where am I? This is awful. But ketamine can trigger out-of-body experiences and hallucinations. Ketamine affects the brain's opioid system, which can naturally become active, even without drugs, when animals are under attack, suggesting that it is trauma that sets off this aspect of near-death experiences in animals and increased brain activity. And so after studying animals and kind of seeing this traumatic response that they were making, that it's having the same effects that ketamine would on our brain, it is believed this could absolutely be the case with humans if they truly believe that they are dying. This is more in the case of being, like, scared enough, thinking, like, oh, I'm about to die, even if you actually aren't. Like, something could be set off to make you have a near-death experience, which is wild. One of the most famous aspects of near-death hallucinations is moving through a tunnel toward a bright light. And the specific cause, of course, of this is not fully clear. They're still working on it. But tunnel vision and, you know, having this narrowed view of, like, oh, I see a light, but it's way at the end of this long tunnel that I have to walk down. The tunnel vision can occur when blood and oxygen flow is depleted to the eye, and that can happen with extreme fear. Okay. So again, having that, like, oh, I'm about to fall and die kind of moment. Or oxygen loss up to the brain. It can also narrow your vision, and those are both very common if you are either scared or if you are actually on your deathbed. Once the oxygen stops going up to your brain, you can get that narrowed vision. And Andrew Newberg, who is a neuroscientist and professor at Thomas Jefferson University and Hospital, he studies brain scans of religious people, like nuns and monks who have experiences when they meditate, which I thought was so cool. And I was like, oh my gosh, you probably have the most fascinating research. When they're in, like, deep, silent meditation, he, you know, watches what their brains are doing, which is crazy. And we might have to talk about him on another episode. But his belief is that the tunnel and the light that NDEers so frequently describe is explained by our eyesight fading because we lose our peripheral areas first, and then the very last part of our vision that we lose is, like, kind of that direct in front of us, like, tunnel scope look. So he's so matter of fact about it. He was like, I believe you all that you're seeing a light, but you can have a tunnel sensation when your vision is the last part of your vision to go as your eyes are about to shut and go into that eternal sleep. You would most likely see a tunnel as your visual system is shutting down. So he sort of was like, open and close case. Not that he doesn't believe things can happen, but the tunnel light, that's what it is to him. Okay. And then I know I'm just going through a few studies because everyone kind of had their own thoughts. And I was like, I can't believe there is this much science on it. But Scientists at the University of Michigan were studying some rats. Again, it's easier to do it with our animal friends first. They were monitoring 9 rats as they were dying. In the 30-second period after the animal's heart stopped beating, they were able to measure a sharp increase in high-frequency brain waves called gamma oscillations. Mm. And these pulses are one of the neuronal features that are thought to kind of pin consciousness in humans. That's, you know, the theory anyway, especially when they link information from different areas of the brain. So these are, you know, important waves to look at. And in the rats, these pulses were found at even higher levels just after the cardiac arrest. They were like the highest they'd ever been.
Interesting.
Even more than when they were awake and well and walking around. But after the cardiac arrest, they had these electrical pulses going crazy, crazy, crazy in the brain. So they were like, wait a second.
And do they know why that would be, say, nothing spiritual about it? Like, what would that be for?
They think it's the brain's last hurrah. That's the best way they can put it. They think, like, as everything is shutting down, like, this is the last area of the brain that is still awake, and it's just, like, firing off everything that it can and kind of giving this just last jolt of, like, here you go. Like, here's a last look at your life.
Well, and I wonder if it's like a jolt as in like it's attempting to kickstart the body.
Sure. 100%. It could absolutely be that. But the thing is, like, scientists are even kind of baffled by it.
How would you know?
How? Yeah. Unless we can see like the pictures in your brain. But basically, like, all of the researchers putting on this, you know, this rat demonstration, we're saying this is totally feasible in the human brain because as we've learned, a lot of things that happen with rats can happen with us. We talk about it a lot. And that elevated level of brain activity and consciousness could absolutely give rise to near-death visions in our brains as we're dying. And there was even a case in 2022, it just happened this year, where human brain waves were actually recorded during death. And I'm going to touch on that later, but I did just want to say it was only rats for so long. And just in February of this year, scientists accidentally got a look at a human's brain. So we'll just tuck that away. That's going to be great. But studies like this one from the University of Michigan with the rats, they give us the framework to explain the light phenomenon.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, like the visual cortex in the brain is highly activated at this time. It gives evidence to suggest that these like gamma electrical pulses are causing the light because these electrical pulses were right over the visual cortex. So it would directly affect your eyes. They were seeing it with the rats and they believe that that is what is happening with humans, that like it's going to go right into your eyeballs and show you, you know, either a glow or a light or the tunnel, whatever it will be. So the lower frequency waves and the gamma that has been shown really causes something to go on with your visual awareness and visual sensation is kind of the summary that they got from this. And again, calling it the brain's last hurrah, their last little electrical shot before you pass. And this demonstration is also giving us the idea that, you know, if something is unfamiliar and confusing, which near-death experiences are, the brain will become overstimulated and hyper-excited, whether it is trying to survive, as you said, give that last little jolt, or it's just trying to compensate for, the confusion of what's going on. Something is being shot off and it goes crazy right over the visual cortex. So that could be why we're seeing the light.
Well, and you know what's interesting? I was thinking like that would make sense of why you feel like you see your life flash before your eyes before you die, because literally all of those neurons are firing.
Totally.
And, you know, that would cause like a ton of memories possibly to just like simultaneously release in your brain. But what I find interesting is that, especially with like the life flash before my eyes thing, that only seems to happen with people who like almost die.
Yes, exactly.
Almost get hit by a car and are missed by an inch. And they're like, I saw my fucking life flash before my eyes. So
it's not necessarily someone on their deathbed who's going at a slower pace. So it seems like it's more of a fear thing that the body is trying to like
fear possibly.
Yeah. It's the body trying to save you from trauma is what scientists are guessing, because they're like, I think it's a defense mechanism that the body is like, oh my gosh, you were just the most scared you've ever been in your life. Here are all of your happy memories. Like,
here you go.
In front of your mind. Here you go. I'm sorry. I love you. Because that is true. It's like some of the, you know, when I was saying like scientists are working on what's the best way to even research near-death experiences right now, they just interview people and like you are exactly right. Like people who almost fell like during rock climbing accidents or somebody who got hit by a truck and lived to tell the tale. It is those people who say like, oh, I saw my whole family and memories from when I was a kid. And it's like, wow, that's how did you see that in like 30 seconds? But you do.
Yeah. Something I find interesting about seeing the light, at least after reading probably, I think I probably read over 200 NDE experiences over the last 3 weeks.
Oh my gosh, I believe it.
But the different ways people describe the light. And what I take from it is explained best by Dr. Bruce Grayson, who is the world's leading expert on near-death experiences. When he was asked, do people really see the light? His answer was, sort of. And he continued by saying, many people who encounter NDEs experience what he calls an overwhelming sense of peace and well-being. People more so describe it as almost like a living entity radiating tremendous love, acceptance, and warmth. And I did find that when reading these stories, not all of them had the light, but most of them did have, yeah, the overwhelming love, and they are enveloped by it. It fills them up completely. So they don't know what to call it, and they simply refer to it as the light. And I think that that's the biggest takeaway from these experiences and why I think it's not a false experience is they literally, most of these people don't have the words to explain it. And it's like having to describe the color blue without saying blue or naming blue objects. Like how do you explain
nothing
blue to someone who's blind?
You can't explain what you're feeling. I read so many stories like that too, where some of the people were like, I don't know how else to say it other than like I was at peace and there was a part of me that didn't even want to come back to Earth because I knew that I was safe wherever I was. And that's so wild to just be like, nobody had to tell me I was safe. I just knew it. Like your brain just told you.
That's a very nice comforting thing, even if there is nothing after this, even if we do actually die and then become nothingness, like, oh my God, that's so scary to think about. But
we get a little hug before we go.
You won't know. Like you don't have to, you won't know that you don't exist. And to be filled with that amount of
that
peace,
comfort.
Sign me up.
I'm with you. I know. It helps reading these stories, honestly. Because I'm like, I hope it feels like that.
But when I think about that, the inability to put into words what you experienced, I think about that a lot when I read biblical verses of people describing interactions with angels and how much they sound like modern day UFO encounters.
Yes, like identical.
Yeah, there was no aircraft or electricity then. So saying like there's a spinning wheel in the air that seemed to be on fire. I mean, to us today, we might look at that same thing and say it was a machine or a craft of some kind with bright lights. Okay. And in the future, we may even have a better way to describe what we are seeing when we have even more knowledge on what things exist.
Right. But back then, you're like, I do not know.
Yeah, it was a burning bush.
To say about what I saw. Yeah, exactly. The burning bush.
Now, I do have some very cool NDE stories to share that have to do with light, but I wanted to ask if you found anything about light involving the body of the dying person.
Like, if the person appeared to be glowing in any way?
Yeah, I did. Because we actually, I think Julia told a story about a body that, I don't think it was her personal story. I think it was one of the stories she read on a Patreon bonus episode about a body glowing.
Too. I think she did too. That does ring a bell. And that I even thought about going back and listening to her bonus episodes because I was like, oh man, does Julia have a lot of NDEs? But I also was like, people have probably heard them already.
In our podcast where I cannot tell you if we have talked about something or if I talked about it with a friend or if I saw it in a documentary. So like, y'all, if we ever repeat ourselves, just ride that wave. Like, we don't know.
Yep, just go along with it. You don't even have to message us and correct us. Just nod your head, and it's like your parents who are starting to like lose their memory a little bit. Just like let us go.
Just let us go.
There is not a ton of science for the body glow, which honestly, that it's what makes it the most fascinating for me because there is not a lot out there. A lot of scientists are kind of just like, that might just be happening, and like we don't really know what to do with it, but. It could here are just some things we can throw out that people have like tried to explain.
Okay.
It could simply be the fact that some humans do change color in their skin as they die. If they're on their deathbed, you know, if something is happening a little more gradual over time, they could be a very pale white or a bright yellow, or in some cases, a light purple, depending on what their ailment is. Mm. So you could say maybe there is some sort of what looks like a glow coming off of their skin because it's just so drastically changing. And then it's also believed that we are producing some sort of electric energy when we are dying, which like we absolutely are, but it's just not always visible, you know, to the eye. But there could be somebody in the room, and some, you know, holistic doctors or people who think of themselves as healers, they may be able to see when the energy is leaving. And so they see some sort of halo or some sort of glow surrounding the dying body. So that it could absolutely be that some people just have the talent to see the electric energy. And then I found that there actually is a name, and I think I had seen this on, I see everything on TikTok, it's so embarrassing. I'd seen this on TikTok as well, but have you heard of synesthesia?
Yeah.
Like the neuro, we may have even talked about it again, who knows, the neuropsychological phenomenon synesthesia, where people can see a color of a person, or even like they assign colors to everyday items, or they assign colors to numbers or letters, and that is just how their brain works. But some people with like a pretty advanced synesthesia, especially emotional synesthesia, may be able to see somebody's aura. And it doesn't just have to be this like, oh, that's a little more, you know, like woo-woo, why, like, can we actually see auras? Researchers in Spain have found that like some individuals actually can see a color and like do have an ability to see a color around a person if they're looking at them. It's like an extra sensory stimuli that you have in your brain. So they could taste a color or a sound. They could feel what something tastes like, or they can associate people with colors. So if we're going to like really dive into every option of what could be happening, some people, when they're in a room with someone dying, can see different colors. And when someone is about to pass, there could be this white or yellowish hue surrounding them because they are seeing this transformation happening, this transition into the next chapter. And so they're seeing this person's color change, which again is probably associated with the energy field around them. But it used to always be this thing of, oh, that's just healers and people who are trying to scam you, like that, like especially in Spain, this was a huge belief of like, watch out for the scammers, they're going to claim to be healers, blah blah blah. But the more that they're studying and testing these people, they're finding that like they do have an extra ability, and they do have these extra sensory features in their brain that they're seeing, you know, on different brain scans, that are like, oh, you do have something a little extra going on up there. Yeah, so it's leading them to believe if you have especially emotional synesthesia, you may be able to see somebody's color or somebody's aura if a transition is happening in their life, and you can see right before they die that they have a glow, which I thought was interesting.
We spoke about synesthesia on this show, I believe, with past guest Kate.
Yes, because, that probably is right.
Yeah, I believe who she came on for Human Superheroes, like Superhuman, and when we did Hometown Haunts Maine. And she was saying that she actually has it associated with colors, or not colors, I'm sorry, colors and numbers. So every time, like, 7 is green or something like that.
Right.
And because I remember I had asked her, do you think that it has anything to do with when we were little, we were given books that were like, that taught you how to count and taught you the ABCs, and they were always associated with colors and objects. So like A is for apple, A is red, B is for banana, banana is yellow. And she was like, that's super fascinating, I've never thought of that. Like assigning the colors to it. Like obviously seeing the colors, like that's a totally different thing, like emotionally, like being able to like see colors in people. But having that connection in your brain, I do wonder if it has to do with how you learned how to count or how you learn.
I do remember that now. Yeah. And that does make total sense. And I think everyone's kind of at a different level when it comes to synesthesia too. Mm-hmm. It's like some people it's just so they can remember like numbers. Some people it's even days of the week. They're like every day of the week has a color. It's this and this. But some people can just look at a person. It's like, I see your color. I see your aura. I see where you're at right now. And that, I just can't believe that that can actually be a real thing.
Seriously.
And that like it's a superhuman power, like we talked about on that episode. It's crazy.
Well, I have two stories revolving light. Do you have any stories involving light?
I do.
Okay.
But you go first. Well, I do have two.
You have two as well. Then let's go back season, fourth season.
Perfect.
Okay. This story comes in from Sharon G. So most of my stories that I have today come from a website that is the Out of Body Experience Research Foundation, OBERF.org. And if you go there, you can read people's real accounts, not just with OBEs and NDEs, but also UFO encounters, people who have memories of themselves before birth, lucid dreams, and even premonitions. So they kind of cover everything. I believe it started as just like out of body experiences, but then they had to go into like different categories because they were like, right. Well, this is sort of like, yes, it's sort of an out of body experience, but also it seems like maybe, you know what I mean? So they had to like categorize them. So this story is from Sharon G. My mother-in-law-to-be was ill in hospital. At the time, I was not aware of the exact diagnosis she had, and I didn't know very much about leukemia. In fact, I expected her to get well and be at our wedding later that year. One morning, I woke up and I said to my fiancé that we should go to the hospital today and not go to work. I had a very strong feeling that we needed to see and be with Mom. Thankfully, he listened, and we phoned work, explained that we were not coming in that day, and went to the hospital to visit her. When we arrived, she was asleep. Her sister was also there with her, sitting in the chair in the corner of the room, waiting for her to wake up. Mom had been hallucinating all week, saying that her mother had been visiting her. Her mother had been dead for a long time, so we weren't too sure what was going on with her there. Andrew and I sat on chairs beside Mom's bed so he could rest his arm next to her. There was a small TV in the corner of the room on a table that we were watching. I was sitting behind Andrew as there wasn't much room to sit beside him. About an hour after we had been there, I noticed a slight movement from Mom, so I turned to look at her thinking she was going to wake up. I looked at her and she opened her eyes and then looked up at the far right corner of the ceiling and smiled. She reached her right arm towards it as though greeting someone and then closed her eyes again. I noticed that I couldn't hear the TV. I thought that maybe Andrew had noticed his mom move and had turned it down. But when I looked at him, he was still watching it as though he could hear it. Then I looked at his aunt sitting in the corner and she was asleep. I also noticed that I couldn't hear the noise, which is always in the hospital, like nurses talking, trolleys moving around, etc. Then I looked back at Mom, and there was a light forming around her. The color is hard to describe, but it was like a golden pale lemon color. The light seemed to be completely surrounding her. Then the light started to move up towards her head. Then it was completely above her. And when I looked directly at the light above her, I couldn't believe what I was seeing as she was in the light, floating above her body. Then she moved slowly towards the corner of the room she was reaching for before and once again stretched out her hand as if to greet someone, and then she was gone. I looked back at her body and noticed that I could hear the TV again, and all the other noise in the hospital was once again loud. And I stood up and said to Andrew and his aunt, who had just woken up, "Mom's gone. She just left." I didn't know any other way to say it because what I saw, she hadn't died. She left.
She exited.
Then all the commotion started with the nurses rushing in and the doctor came in, and then she was pronounced dead. And this was the first time I had ever had an experience like this. And the whole experience is still very, very clear to me. I know I saw her leave. The shock I felt afterwards was due to the fact that I fully expected her to get well. I never knew she was terminally ill until well after she died.
Wow.
Whew.
That is wild that it's like the outside person witnessing all of that. Yeah. Like that is, I can't imagine. And to be doing it alone, nobody else is watching what's happening.
Yeah. And like, obviously when you're with someone who's ill and in hospital, especially if they're asleep or unconscious, like there's always a part of you that's like, ooh, this is bad. But like, they didn't expect her to die that day.
Right. Like nobody said, oh, this is happening tonight.
Yeah, they weren't really sitting next to the bed waiting for her to die. They were sitting next to the bed waiting for her to, you know, come out of the spell she was in so that they could talk to her. So I just thought that was interesting to have that experience and know that you didn't make it up. Like maybe something happened that wasn't what you thought had happened, but knowing that you didn't make it up.
Yeah, Man. Well, that is really wild.
Yeah.
I can't imagine seeing that and then just having to be like,
anyway.
Yep, she left. Like, she's gone. Yeah, like, I know what I saw. This really happened. But, I mean, also, it seemed like a peaceful, nice moment.
For sure.
So I guess that's the good part.
Yeah, I'd carry that with me my whole life.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have a story from someone named Colleen. I don't believe they want me to use the last name, so Colleen, which involves a glow and a light, a little bit of both of what we just talked about.
Okay.
My mother had been in and out of hospitals over the last year, near death at each admission. She was coherent and not delusional. She had congestive heart failure and lung cancer had spread throughout her entire body. One morning in the hospital room, it was about 3 a.m., and all was quiet. My mother stared out the door of her room and into the hall that led to the nurse's station and the other patients' rooms. "Mom, what do you see?" I asked. "Don't you see it?" she said. "That bright light. It's so bright out there. It feels like it's calling me. It's so warm. It's so bright." And she just kept harping on the bright, warm light that was out in the hall. And it was very strange for my mother to say this because she had never said anything like this before and wasn't even sure there was an afterlife or anything to welcome her to the other side. She was not religious, she didn't have many beliefs, and it felt so strange, like a hallucination was happening. Her surgeon said there was no point in treatment as cancer had spread throughout her entire body, and he said she might have 6 months to live at the most, maybe even three. I brought her home with me to die so she wouldn't have to look out at the hospital anymore and see things that weren't there. So the night of her passing, she was restless, she was anxious, and a few minutes before 8 p.m., she said, "I have to go. They're here. They're waiting for me." Her face completely glowed in this moment. All of the color returned to her pale, sickly face, and she attempted to raise herself up out of bed, and her last words were, "I have to go. It is beautiful." And she passed shortly thereafter at 8 p.m.
Boy, oh boy.
I know. It's always the people who are, like, not religious at all, too, it seems like, who have these experiences.
That is interesting, actually. I have quite a few. And obviously, next episode, we'll definitely get into that because
sure, yeah.
we are talking about people who have met God or, you know, a God. But yeah, a lot of people, these stories come from, like I said, all over the world. So there are some parts of the world that, you know, aren't touched by traditional Christianity, but also right. There are people who were Christians, like very strongly believed in Jesus, God, the Holy Spirit, the whole shebang, and after their near-death experience decided that that wasn't quite it.
Yeah.
But
right.
still there's something there.
Yeah. It's wild.
Well, speaking of mothers,
oh.
I want to share this story from Randy N. It's very similar, actually, to the two stories we just heard. But in this, there are multiple witnesses to the event, and neither of them are religious or spiritual in any way.
See, there we go.
Here we go. My mother had lived in a different state than my sister and I for many years. She had been diagnosed with some substantial mental illnesses and was an alcoholic. Everyone in the family had the same issues with her. Communication had been difficult and often ended with harsh words and my phone being unplugged until she was semi-rational. It really hurt my sister and I to love her so much, but at the same time be so frustrated by the situation, and we couldn't do anything to help her because of the mental issues and her stubbornness. So long story short, she was diagnosed with throat and mouth cancer and wouldn't follow any advice. She consented to some radical surgeries but refused radiation. Within 9 months, we got a call from the hospital out of state telling us our mother was not doing very well and was in the end stages of cancer. So my sister and I flew back and brought her to Washington so we could be with her. And she passed away 1 month later. My sister and I were with her the entire day on the day of her death. We kind of knew this was it because all of the clinical signs were there. And when her breathing got irregular, we both took her hands and I kissed her forehead. She took three final breaths, and the room was absolutely silent. I felt locked to her for a minute or two, and I could only focus on her. While looking down at her face, I saw a very soft yellow glow, and my peripheral vision, I saw it in the whole room. Wow. Then the feeling I actually felt was the most calm feeling of warmth and well-being that came from somewhere inside of me. The experience only lasted a minute, maybe two, maybe three. My sister and I sat there for 15 minutes or so, not speaking. And when we left the room, I asked her, Did you feel that? And she had felt and seen the very same thing. I am a skeptic through and through, and I really want to call it a stress reaction felt by both my sister and I, but the truth is I don't know what it was, since I'm not religious. Was I feeling the energy leave her body? I have no idea, but I do know that I felt something powerful that night, whatever the cause.
Hmm. Wow.
So again, like that could be something, like we said earlier about how, you know, the color does change in a person before they die. Right. I know that Julia has told some stories about how all of a sudden all the color comes back and they look like they don't look healthy. Sick anymore. And they're like, right. And she knows that as like, this isn't necessarily a good thing. A lot of families will be like, oh my gosh, my loved one's not sick anymore. And the hospice nurse or the nurses might be like, well, actually.
Well, wait. Yeah. It's almost like the glow and the light are actually a sign that death is even closer now because yeah. They're having that last hurrah. And that's kind of what the glow is.
But what I find interesting about that is not necessarily, well, one, the fact that she saw a glow on her mother, but also the out of her peripheral vision, she could see it around her. Yes. And the overwhelming feeling of well-being.
Yeah, of that she could feel
fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was interesting that makes to
it,
me.
That makes it a lot more fascinating when she, it's not just, oh, this person has a glow. The room now has a glow and I feel safe and warm. Like that is interesting.
Fascinating.
Yeah, my last story, I realized like it doesn't even have to be a story because I know we have touched on it on the bonus episode, but I just kind of brought it on this one because it is somebody that I was close to that passed away. But my friend Ryan Diddy, who died in 2021, had a huge surge of energy while he was dying at his home on hospice care that my friend Ashley could only explain as like the happiest, most optimistic moment she had seen in him in like a year. I mean, it's not even just like, oh, a couple of months. Like he was so sick and so discouraged for so much of his, you know, cancer journey. And then finally, when he had agreed to hospice and came home, you know, he's on all this morphine, like just being, you know, kept as comfy as possible. But he basically was in and out of consciousness constantly. You know, you'd try to tell him a few things here and there, hold his hand, be with him. But really, he was just sleeping and on a bunch of morphine. But she said, the night before he died, he popped up. He was making jokes. He wanted to be carried to the bathroom. Like, he had a catheter, but he asked Ashley, like, you need to get me up. I'm going to the potty. And he, like, flirted with her the whole time she walked him over. She was like, this is adorable, of course, and was, like, enjoying it. But her and our friend Kyle, who was over there, I think, making them dinner or just trying to do something helpful, he witnessed it as well. And they were both like, what is going on? But he was pretty, you know, like jaundiced and pale, and he looked like he was a dying man the last time I saw him. But Ashley said all of his color came back. It was just like, you know, like color in the cheeks, color in the eyes. Like she just hadn't seen him that way in so long. He made his jokes. He was at peace. He was full of joy. And then early the next morning, he passed away. And I think also at one point his dad was in town kind of helping out with things too. And I believe his dad reported that Ryan sat up just like an hour before he died and said, well, Dad, I'm ready to go. And just like said it so matter of factly. But I just always liked that story, even if it meant he was that much closer to death. I liked hearing that like he got to be himself for one last little surge.
Yeah, I mean, it almost seems like a gift.
Yes. Just like, hey, I'm okay. I'm going to be okay. And I love you. That's like, felt like a love letter to Ashley, which was cool.
Yeah. There's story after story of people experiencing some sort of light phenomenon, glow phenomenon upon the death of a loved one or upon their own near-death experience. And the question is, you know, does that prove there's life after death or just that something very mysterious but totally natural happens when a person passes? And when I was thinking about that, I thought maybe it was important to remember what exactly light is made of when you're trying to solve that little mystery.
Sure.
Light is actually made up of particles called photons, and they do ride on a wave. Like a lot of people are like, oh, they're waves. And it's like, yes, but it's waves of photons. They are literally little tiny packages of energy. And light is also the manifestation of an electromagnetic force. And that's what helps, you know, that's what the photons are carrying. That's what's in their package. And electromagnetic fields, forces, that's one of the four fundamental forces of nature. And there are many things in nature that produce light. Like, for example, swamp gas. It's when methane and hydrogen sulfide, carbon dioxide, and phosphine combine. And in this combination, which, by the way, is produced by organic decay, it can cause photon emissions. Now, the only problem with that theory is that our bodies don't really decay immediately upon death. Maybe another chemical reaction is taking place.
Totally.
Or the theory that I like even more is that perhaps the photons that travel are strong enough to take what we would call a soul along with them. And that's what we're seeing, is that these photons that are all around us all the time, they're going through our body, they're going through the desk in front of me. Like, the only time, well, not the only time, but a lot of times photons die after they enter our eyes. Like the screen, my computer screen, the light is photons coming at me. They go in my eye. My eye processes them, sees an image, and the photons die. Right. But what I'm thinking is that, like, they could potentially, this, you know, electromagnetic force could carry something with it.
Absolutely. It's like it's taking our soul or our consciousness away, however you want to look at it. I mean, whatever your beliefs are, really. But
if it's energy, which obviously part of it is. I mean, we're completely made up of energy.
We are energy. Yeah, that's why, like, you know, that's why I had to make it clear at the beginning, like, hey, I'm playing devil's advocate here with the scientific theories, because when it comes to the glow, I absolutely think, like, there's just so much more taking place that, like, yes, you can break it down and say, like, maybe there is some sort of chemical release that is happening, or maybe you just, you know, you have to be somebody who has synesthesia to see what's happening and you just didn't know you had it, whatever. But I just believe there really is, like, this energy release of our consciousness leaving our physical body that, like, can be viewed if the right person is looking. I don't know. That's just how I feel. Something is happening.
Something's going on. All right. We're going to get to the bottom of it. That actually is where we're going to call it for today. Next week, we're going to be questioning why it is we see dead people before we're about to die. And we're going to try to find an explanation for why some people get to meet God and others don't. Seems pretty unfair.
Yeah, a little bit.
Please, please consider donating to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/keepitweirdpodcast. You know, if every one of our listeners donated just $1 a month, we would be able to continue to produce this show for you every single week ad-free. We could start saving for things like live shows, maybe even visiting some of y'all's cities. Maybe we could hire an editor and live our lives. Who knows? The possibilities are endless.
Let's do it.
The possibilities are endless when your show is funded. Anyway, you can donate $1, $5, or $10 to our show, and you get amazing things in return, like bonus episodes, discounts on merch, shout-outs on the show, and a monthly newsletter. You can also support our show by buying and wearing our merch, which you can find all 7 or 8 designs. I can't remember how many, but there's a lot over at www.keepitweirdpodcast.com/merch. And obviously, please follow us on social media at Keep It Weirdcast across all platforms so we can swap stories and you can check out what cool stuff is coming up on our show and in our lives.
Whee.
To wrap this episode up, I wanted to leave you with a quote by a woman named Crystal Ann Bengston, who wrote a book called Sacred Light Spirit Eagle, which might be problematic. I don't know. I haven't read the book. But it's all about her near-death experience. Crystal said, "I was surrounded by ripples and cascades of light, rising and falling all around me like immense waves in the middle of a huge ocean, held and sheltered within a mighty flow of light." Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and keep it weird. Please don't crash. My Audacity crashed on me last week for the first time in a long time. Not recording, thank God, editing.
Oh,
but
God,
still,
thank goodness.
I was like, are you kidding me?
I hate that. I still have nightmares of when it was happening to me. But it, luckily, when I was editing with Julia last time, it didn't happen, because for a while I thought she was the curse. But it didn't happen on the last one. So we're hoping for the best.